Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, and here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the point. And the point today is Paul Martin. Paul is an amazing guy. His brother was on the podcast a couple of months ago, so we're excited to hear the perspective of the older Martin. Paul, how are you doing?
Wonderful, Joe. How are you? Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you here. So I'm great. Thanks for asking. Paul, why don't you give us a little bit of like a intro to you, a little background story. Who are you? Where are you from?
So kind of the same as my brother that you interviewed a way back. It's not going to be much different. Born and raised in Cleveland. Lived here all my life. I know, obviously, we hail from the same alma mater, being Ignatius guys. Life is good. It's always busy. I have two little kids. So that takes up plenty of time and everything like that. That's about me. Born and raised here in Cleveland. Been here all my life.
Yeah.
Plan on staying.
Well, we're lucky to have you here, both on the podcast and in Cleveland, Paul. And I'm going to hit you with a first-time question I've actually never asked someone before. When you and I were talking podcast, talking life, we're catching up, what made you think, hey, I want to be on the podcast?
Well, I mean, I've listened to other people, and I love what you're doing. I love how you're putting stuff out there and producing content for the world to see and just trying to reach an audience. And I think that's great. So I'm honored to be here that you asked me on here, because you've had a lot of really good guests with a lot of unique stories. And there's I love how you do it, that there's no one specific avenue, that you're looking for anybody to bring on who's got a cool story, who might be able to reach somebody. So that variety, I think, is really attractive. And then when you approached me about it, no way would I say no to that. So I'm just happy to be here.
Awesome. So to give a little background on me and Paul and I met through mutual friends. I don't know, Paul, maybe 5 years ago. Is that about right?
Probably, man. Because it all started with fantasy football, as many great things in life do. So it's probably been even, man, longer than that. I'd say almost a decade even.
That's crazy. You're probably right. I mean, it's close to that long ago. And Paul's just always been a very charismatic guy, a lot of energy. Paul will tell you what he thinks. Paul's very clear about what he thinks, and all in a respectful way. And that's something that I really admire about Paul. And like you mentioned, both graduates of St. Ignatius High School in Cleveland. Go Cats. Shout out to our alumni out there. And just a lot of great things to see. A lot of great things to say about Paul. Paul, why don't you walk us through maybe some of your early grade school, high school life, and maybe some of the experiences of your life that have influenced you going forward at this point?
Yeah, so I know when we talked about it, we'll just go ahead and rip the proverbial Band-Aid off now. A big part of this story was going through chemo, having cancer as a child. So I grew up in Parma, went to St. Charles for grade school, right over on Ridge Road, and then obviously we talked about heading over to 1911 West 30th for high school. A big part of that story that I'm trying to put out to the world and share with people is obviously the journey I went through dealing with that. So I don't know if you want me to jump into that.
How old were you, Paul?
I was 13.
Yeah, sure, let's go for it.
Yeah, I was diagnosed 13. August 8th of 05. So I was 13, entering my eighth grade year. Went through, it was August 8th of 05. I started treatment 2 days later, August 10th of 05, and 3 years, 3 months, and 19 days later, November 29th of 2008 was my last day of chemo.
My gosh.
So
that's amazing.
Some numbers you don't forget, Joe.
Yeah, for real. I'm not surprised by any stretch, but it's impressive how ingrained they are. I mean, you just pop those out like incredibly quickly. Paul, so you're going into your eighth grade year, is your last year of grade school. You're 13 years old. Most 13-year-olds in life don't really have a great, this is bull, I don't mean it negatively, but 13-year-old's perspective on life is a little different than someone who's, you know, father has two kids and that kind of thing.
You're
what
you're still a
do you remember
kid
the
13.
Oh my God. Yeah. And do you remember your first thoughts when you heard, like, how did you respond to that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's at 13. The world is your oyster. Basically, you're mm-hmm. a kid. You're carefree and all that. And that's what you should be at 13. You shouldn't have that childhood innocence pulled away. So I mean, for me, it was always like cancer was something that, you know, the neighbor has, or your buddy's grandpa passed away from, or something right. like that. Like, it's not something that impacts you. It's just all third party. And then when it's all of a sudden knocking on your doorstep, it changes things. Definitely kind of it was shell shocking for sure. I mean, I remember everything about that first day and the few days immediately after. That's one of those things you just don't forget. And it was weird, because my initial reaction was you have so many questions running through your head, but you're too overwhelmed to know where to start. So it was kind of one of those, you just had to make a decision in that moment. And the decision was just like, okay, well, this is going to be what it is. And there's some things I can't change about this. But I remember basically telling my dad, just like, okay, we're in for a fight. So let's start fighting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to have that perspective at a young age too is amazing. Like, to be able to kind of compartmentalize and say, yeah, this stinks, I was dealt a tough hand, but we're going to work through it, is really incredibly mature on your part, especially at that age.
Yeah. I guess you kind of look back and just think, okay, well, you had two choices. You fight or quit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, And I think that mental attitude is a choice to me. For a large part of your life is how you perceive it. There were certain things that weren't in my control, but I could control how I felt about them.
I like it. And that's what's going to drive you to.
No, go ahead.
Sorry, yeah, the lag is tough sometimes. I was going to say, that's what drives you to make different decisions too, and to be able to stick with them and have the discipline to keep fighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when they say kind of attitude is a choice, I guess what I'm really saying is there's so many things in life you can't control. But when you're in a rough situation like that, you should take advantage of everything that you can control. And I firmly believe that your mental willpower, your outlook on things have a direct correlation, or not a correlation, but a direct connection to your physical well-being. So while a lot of this stuff was out of my hands in terms of the medical stuff, that's up to the doctors and the nurses and all that. Like, well, if the least I can do is be hopeful, then if that's the only thing in my control, then there's a lot I can't control right now. So if this is all I have, then I'm not going to relinquish that maybe one last mm-hmm. fleeting thing that I do have.
Yeah. You got to make the most of it and put yourself as in the best position you can to succeed. And in that case, that is what that's doing. You're manifesting at your hope will turn into something healthy and beautiful for you, which mm-hmm. sounds like it did. Sure. So you're 13, you start receiving chemo. Obviously mom and dad are on your side. They're like, hey, let's do this thing. Like what was schooling like? What was your eighth grade year like? I mean, that's a big transition.
I said August 8th of 05 was the day I got diagnosed. And, you know, school starts what, 2.5 weeks after that? Something like that. Well, the what they told me at first, school didn't even come to mind, because the weird thing. So I had what's called ALL, acute lymphoblastic leukemia, which it's a more common childhood cancer. And it's luckily it's gotten better since I was diagnosed, but the survival rate, is very good. And it's gotten better, but it's also one of those, there's not a progressive decline to it. It's very much, you're good, you're not so good, and then you kind of fall off a cliff.
Wow.
So my doctor told me, and I still see an oncologist now. I have an appointment once a year, and I'm part of this long-term survivorship study. They told me when I first got diagnosed, because I was 13, and I thought, well, I'll be the, anything you can say to my parents, you can say to me, because it's my health, so I want to know everything. And Dr. Joanne Hilden, who's a wonderful woman, she flat out told me, she goes, okay, well, where are we sitting right now? Like, what's going on and everything? Tell me how you're feeling. And so I explained it to her, and she kind of said, well, how honest do you want me to be? Well, I'm 13, so I'm a tough adult that can handle anything you can throw at me, right? She goes, okay, well, I'll be real with you. She goes, where we're sitting right now, if we don't start treatment immediately, you probably don't have 2 weeks to live.
Holy cow.
That's what I mean about that whole, like, it's not this slow gradation of things getting worse. It's kind of like there's a real razor thin line that you have to walk. So when you're 13, all of a sudden you go, wait, 2 weeks or what? That's not what I wanted to hear, doc. Maybe,
yeah,
don't be so honest. That's what I get for asking. My doctor now, actually, he estimates it was probably closer to about 10 days.
Oh my God.
So
then that
school seemed like
chemo expanded.
Yeah. Yeah. All of a sudden you kind of start getting a little tunnel vision and start thinking about, okay, so what's tomorrow going to be like? Is there going to be a tomorrow? All those questions start running through your mind that.
Yeah. Now, Paul, so the second day, then you start that chemo.
Mm-hmm.
And how long until you start feeling a little better? Because it went on.
Yeah, so I had surgery the second day. I had to have some stuff done surgically, and then I started like my first dose or round of chemo was on the 10th. I think I was in the hospital initially for like a week and a half before I could go home. It was, like I said, 3 years, just shy of 4 months. There was a lot of different stuff. Obviously, I wasn't in the hospital that whole time. There was no like major surgery to remove a tumor. It was just a lot of very heavy doses of chemo. They called it this roadmap. So they have this whole plan for where you're going to be on this date, where you're going to be on this month, based on it. It's like a flow chart, basically, how you respond to this.
Yeah.
We'll either end up doing this or this in response or whatever. So, it was just in and out of the hospital. I mean, I started having spinal taps and bone marrow biopsies once a week for several months. So I'd have to come in, I think my appointments were always on Thursdays. So for the first like 6 months, I'd have to come in at least once a week and have a spinal tap done and get more chemo that way. And then there were some things that I'd have to come in for, and it would be like a minimum 4-day hospital stay. And then there were other times where I would just go to my appointments once a week, then once every 2 weeks, then once, whatever, once a month. And it would just be as simple as I hate to say just as simple as, but to me it was as simple as, okay, well, I don't have to do anything major. I'm just taking pills at home. That's all it was. So it changed depending on where we were at, kind of in the process. And obviously the longer it went, kind of the better things got, the more.
And then how did that work throughout high school? Did they?
Yeah. My, my experience there was great. I mean, you know how wonderful that place is, and they truly care about you as a person. So my guidance counselor, Brian Martin, who's an absolutely wonderful, wonderful human. He did a lot to kind of coordinate with my teachers, like when I had appointments going on, how I was feeling, like my mom, where I could just email him with updates, information, and he was kind of my liaison between all my teachers. That way I didn't have to tell my story or say the same thing.
Yeah, but that's fantastic.
Seven times this, yeah, nine periods. Is that how many periods we had in high school? Nine? So basically, over and over again. So they helped me out a lot. St. Charles was obviously great because that was when it like initially started. I missed 96 days of eighth grade. But they did. It was so funny. Like, I remember sitting in the hospital at times, like doing math homework, and my father will attest this. I can't stand math. I'm a history nerd. I'm not a math kid, but I'm happy to be doing my homework because it's one of those, like, all you have is this one little bit of normalcy. Like, you're, to quote Will Smith, your life got flipped, turned upside down. And so when you're laying in a hospital bed at 13, hooked up to all these things, feeling like a Frankenstein's monster, the only thing you have is a math sheet to work on. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, here, this makes me feel real. This is the only normal thing about my life at this point, so I'm almost embracing it.
You're subliminally working towards a goal that way too. Like, you're subliminally working on the premise that, you know what, this math's going to matter because I'm going to be here to take the test, to learn it, and to keep developing it. Like, there's a subliminal progress there that.
Yeah, without even realizing it, it's keeping you moving forward. And I think having that hope, that optimism is a big thing. Just you can't run a marathon in three steps. It's a lot of little steps that get you there.
Do you have any specific memories of, like, maybe some of the harder days? Like, there have to be times when you were just totally overwhelmed, Paul, and like, or down, where the hope feels like the hope's gone.
Yeah, my first day of eighth grade lasted about a half hour. I was like all excited that, hey, I made it to the first day. I'm all good. I went into class and I'm sitting there in my eighth grade homeroom, and my good friend, he's sitting behind me. And I remember I turned around and I looked at him and I'm like, I don't feel so good. And I ran out of the room, and you have a lot of nausea going through certain types of chemo. There's a lot of side effects that people are aware of, and a lot more that people probably don't even realize. So I would get sick a lot on some of the stuff they gave me at first. So first day of eighth grade lasted 30 minutes. So it wasn't how I wanted it to go. I remember spring of 07. So I'd been going through for, no, spring of 06. So I've been going through it for about 6-7 months at the time. Spent a lot of time in the hospital. It was one of those that you just didn't feel right. I kept spiking fevers, which was like a big red alert going through that stuff, because I had like no immune system to fight anything off. So if I got a fever or if I got any type of sickness, I had to be admitted to the hospital so they could monitor me. Because, I mean, literally there were times where, like, I just didn't have white blood cells in my body to do anything. And I'm probably butchering some of the medical explanations out there, so I apologize to any of your listeners who are medical professionals. I'm going off the 13-year-old interpretation of how things were told to me. But, I remember going to the hospital.
13-year-old interpretation.
It's easier.
Works better for my brain.
We're not doctors. I was in the hospital for like 21 days in the spring, because I just, nothing was going right. I wasn't responding to certain things, and it's kind of tough because you place so much trust in the people taking care of you. And I mean, the Cleveland Clinic was a wonderful place, the Children's Hospital. They you'll never hear me say a bad word about anybody down there or anything. It was great. But I remember times they'd come in and I'm like, okay, so we ran all these tests. What's going on? And they'd go, we don't know. We're going to run more tests. So when you're 13 and all you keep hearing is, we don't know, we're not sure what this is, it's like, okay. Trying to hold on to it here.
Yeah.
It's the darkness is starting to close in a little bit, and it's not what you like or what you want to have happen. But that's really where your mettle kind of gets tested. It's easy to be good when times are good.
Right.
But when times are bad, it's different.
Oh my gosh, so true. So true. That's when your back's against the wall, right? As the saying goes, it's like, who are you? And no one's looking. It's all those sorts of ideas and ideologies there.
Yep.
Paul, do you feel like you had the most normal of an experience as you possibly could have given your situation? Like, given that you made the most of it, do you feel, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's one of those that hindsight's 2020. I wouldn't change a whole lot. I think I was very blessed to be surrounded by a lot of really good people, both in a personal way with my family and friends, my brothers, my parents. But then the medical staff and everybody like that. I never really looked back on anything and thought, man, I wish I would have done this, or I wish I could have changed this. And part of that is because a lot of it was simply out of my control. But I also, I'm not one to really live with any kind of regrets either. It's weird looking back, and it's so strange to see this or say this, but you can't really understand it unless you were in it, sort of thing. I look at having cancer and my experience, what I went through, as one of the greatest blessings in my life, because it completely changed my perception on everything. Not that I would wish it on my worst enemy or anything like that, but I look at where things are now and all that, and I wonder, okay, well, like, how much would be different if that hadn't happened? And like, I met my wife on a blind date. So would I have had the courage to say yes to that if I hadn't gone through that experience? Well, we could snowball this into, well, if I hadn't said yes to that, then where would this be in life? I wouldn't have my kids. I wouldn't have this. So it's one of those, like, you kind of, everything is interwoven in a way. So instead of looking at it as like, oh, I'd give anything to go back and take it away, it's like, well, yeah, while it's a terrible thing to go through, for me and my life and my situation, it didn't define my life, but it definitely changed who I was and shaped who I am. And I like to think that in a lot of ways you take the good with it more so than the bad.
Wow. Yeah. That's tremendous out of you, Paul. It's tremendous. Just from knowing you, that it doesn't come as a surprise that you've found a way to embrace it as something that's had a positive impact on you, despite the struggles that were innate to it at that time. I have to ask you though, so what was the biggest lesson you took from it? If you view it that way, what are some of the biggest? Because you've clearly taken some positive effects from it.
Don't give up.
Or impacts, maybe.
Don't give up. It's that simple. Just in everything in life, you have a choice to quit or to keep going. And if you're not dead, then don't quit. It's really easy to remember. It's a lot harder to put into practice. But I firmly believe that a lot of that comes down to your attitude, your perception, on what you can accomplish. On I employ that across all facets of life, whether it's personal life, athletics, schoolwork, job related, whatever you want to do in life, work for it and make it happen. And when things come your way, and they will come your way, then you can either choose to view everything as an opportunity for growth and an obstacle to overcome, and or you can just let it defeat you.
Well, yeah. Paul, how do you mix that with the idea at some point maybe it's not like, how do you, what do you do when you're going up the river and you're like, you know, maybe I should be in a different river? You know, how do you weigh, how would you recommend someone weighs that?
Again, I think a lot of times people overcomplicate things when in a lot of cases it's really not that hard. When you're faced with a challenge, you kind of ask yourself a few questions. Can I change this? Well, if you can change it, then is it like plausible to what changes, what adjustments should you make in life? Should you stay in that river and keep fighting? Or should you go find another way around? I mean, if things aren't working, then ask yourself, why aren't they working? Why am I not attaining what I want to attain? Is it something I'm doing wrong? Do I need to take ownership of this and realize where my shortcomings are? And if so, how do I change them? How do I adapt to my situation? If you can change your situation, change it. If you can, whatever you're dealing with, whatever the obstacle is, either figure out a way to deal with it, go around it, go through it, go over it. Because those are your only options other than giving up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so amazing how
that's your choice. But for those of us who want to succeed in life, that's simply just not an option. You simply can't surrender to things in life. Can't even hate that word.
Surrender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To give up, and that's one of the saddest things I think in life is when you have people who have potential. Who give up, who quit. It's like that wasted talent is such an unfortunate thing in life. And if you just had that positive mental attitude, that willingness to overcome, it would do a lot.
Yeah, I feel like you see that in sports all the time. Like there's famous people, like I think of John Daly, right? Like, hey, dude, maybe if you stop partying all the time, or like Allen Iverson, it's like if you could show up once in a while. Like, these are people with wicked talent that just like threw it away.
Yeah.
And of course, that's on the grand athletic scale, but there's a million and one examples that fall under that, right? Like people that could be amazing doctors that don't have the grit to go through the schooling or the desire or whatever. Like, yeah, that's so true, Paul.
Sure, that wasted talent. I think that's a fair thing. We could all look at our lives and you could think of people that you're like, man, if you could have done this or this, or I wish I had your brains, your abilities in this avenue, your musical talent, your whatever, but for one reason or another, you gave up on it. You didn't, things started to get hard and you just couldn't overcome it, or you chose not to overcome it. There's a great guy. His name's Lou Corrala. I would tell everybody out there, go follow this guy on social media. He's a Georgia Tech strength and conditioning coach, and he's got some of the best stuff out there. Super motivating guy. Got a lot of really good videos on Instagram and social media and stuff like that. And I always keep in mind one of his videos that he has this great quote. He talks about winning, and obviously he's talking to a football team, but you can apply this to any facet in life, whether it's your job, your sports, your relationships, your promotion, education, anything. And he basically said, sometimes you do everything right and you still lose because life just isn't fair. Certain things you can't control. So that's where you get to decide how you respond to something. There's a lot in life you can't control. You can respond how you react to things. So the reality is things won't always go your way. What are you going to do to overcome that? When you get faced with those situations in life, do you just lay there and let it beat you down? And that's what I could have done. I mean, sure, I could have had that pity party, that whole I'm going to feel sorry for myself sort of thing, but chose not to. And like to think that some good came out of that.
Yeah, because you had it, man. Like that, like a kid fighting cancer, like, man. I mean, that's a lot of people are going to agree. Like, that's one of the worst things. And yet you took it head on and look at all the wisdom that you can share from it as a result. Like, it's just crazy. I don't know. I think it's part of what makes you like just a great dude, but like a great dad, a great person to be around, good energy. Like, you're not a guy that just sits around and lets things waste by. And so I would imagine that, I mean, to the extent that I know you and just everything that you're saying, I would imagine that you apply that across the board and that's what makes you great, you know? And I think we all can take something from that, take something from your story in the sense of when we face challenges, maybe not even to that gravity, but face a challenge like you do, you have either the fight or the flight. And if you're flying, like if you're just taking the flight avenue, if you're taking the surrender, the rollover, show your stomach, then that's a lot of wasted potential, a lot of wasted talent that you otherwise could have faced head on.
Yeah,
bravery.
Life gets a lot tougher if you have that mentality that you like. I like what you said about, well, I'm just gonna roll over and show my belly to the lion. Okay, well, the lion's gonna eat you then. What did you think was gonna happen? Did you think things were gonna get better when you gave up? No, I mean sometimes it's not easy. But it's a lot harder to be unsuccessful than it is to just keep fighting and keep going. And a lot of that too, it all comes back to that perspective. And I think that was a big takeaway for me, is just kind of being able to put life into perspective. So looking at situations and sometimes maybe asking yourself, like, is this really that big of a deal? Is this really something I should be getting upset over? Is this really something that should stress me out or whatever? Because everybody has their own demons in life. And this is by no means a, like, oh, I had the toughest situation. I didn't deal with anything difficult compared to a lot of people out there. I mean, there's an unlimited number of people who went through way, way, way more than I did or I ever will. But at the same time, everybody fights their own demons. The hardest thing in life is whatever you decide it was. So the hardest thing in your life, it's graded on your scale, on the Joe Clark scale of what is difficult and challenging in life. And mine is graded on my personal scale. And somebody else sees it, well, this is the hardest thing in my life. So it's not like there's no hard number on it that, well, this challenge is worth this many points in terms of challenges. And this thing is where it's all individualized and what each person deals with and overcomes. But I think if you're able to sometimes just kind of have that bird's eye view of life and think, okay, is this really that difficult? Is this really, no, 'cause you know what? Things are going to get better. I can make them better. So yeah, it's okay to sometimes sit there and go, yeah, this kind of sucks. This is difficult. This is challenging. Sure. But at some point you have to make the decision that, okay, I've felt sorry for myself long enough. And now we're going to go ahead and improve on things.
Dude. Yes. 'Cause just recognizing that something's difficult and then saying, okay, now I have to make the decision is so, like, that's how you get through life. Otherwise, you just flounder. And floundering and that stagnation is so dangerous because you just, again, go back to that wasted potential. And the thing with it is, like, you don't get to redo it. Like, it's not like you messed up on a level of Mario and you just get to, like, turn it right back on and go again. Like, once it's gone, that's the stuff that you just don't get back. And any of the lessons or any of the growth. Yeah. Yep. I just think at some point you have to override whatever's wiring your brain to say, like, I'm okay just being average, or like, I'm okay showing my stomach. Like, at some point, I think you have to mentally just grit it out to a point that you don't accept that, because you're going to die. We're all going to die, and we're all going to face tough stuff. And you either let all of that consume you and live in morbidity, and then there's your one chance, or you don't, and you take the highest.
And how sad is that? Like, to sit there and think that how many people out there are going to go their whole life just accepting mediocrity.
I'm not saying
like, sure. Yeah. I'm all about, hey, be all you can be. And you're only limited to what you tell yourself you're limited to. Sure, there's certain things. Like, Joe, I'm 5'7" and I'm not good at basketball. I can work all day long, and guess what? It doesn't matter how much mental willpower I have or determination, I will not be playing in the NBA ever.
I get it.
I'm never going to break a world record for the a marathon time. Just not gonna happen. So yeah, there's some things in life that are simply like out of your control, and knowing your limits, a little bit of humility there is a good thing. But when you find something you're good at, when you find something you're interested in, it's not about how far or how high you can reach. It's just about how much you're willing to keep at it. Where is your summit? Where is your peak? It's wherever you tell yourself. I mean, yeah, if you're into music, no, you might never play a stadium show in front of 50,000 people, or sell more albums than Garth Brooks. But if you can look back on what you did and say, yeah, I worked really hard and I feel like I did all I could, well, then you reach that peak, you reach that summit of your potential, simply because you kept at it.
You probably brought joy to people. I mean, I think that's like an immense aspect of what we do. If you're bringing joy to other people, if you're helping other people grow and all that kind of stuff, like, how awesome is that? And I mean, to take that situation, like that person that performs at bars downtown or bars in Nashville or whatever, and is a musician, and like, no, yeah, you're not selling out at MSG three nights in a row because you're not Elton John. Like, that's okay. Making all these people here sing along, have a good time, enjoy their night. You're bringing goodness into the world. If you're bringing goodness into the world, you're doing something right.
And I think that's where a lot of this connects to overcoming those challenges, having a positive mental attitude, because positivity is attractive. Like, we want to surround ourselves with people in life who are happy. Who, like, when was the last time you thought to yourself, man, this person I know, this dude is, he's miserable, he complains, he this and that, I would love to spend more time with him. Nobody says that. Like, nobody wants to be around that negativity. You want to surround yourself with positive people in life. So if you can bring that to other people and then maybe help some people up who maybe don't share in that happiness, plant a few of those seeds, it could go a long way in helping others. And I think that's what a lot of this comes back to, is that these challenges you overcome in life, these gifts you have, maybe they're not necessarily for you, but they're for others. So figure out how you can share them with people. There's probably an Amazon truck outside that my dog thinks is going to take over the world right now.
It's okay. We love our furry friends. The Dude, you know what's crazy though is once you get in the trenches of the negativity, like then it seems almost inevitable that you get more and more wrapped into it. And like you can fall in that downward spiral really quickly. There's something about negativity that's like it's such a leech, and it just brings people down. I think
it's so like, dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah. It's so dangerous.
It's so easy to let it happen to ourselves and to fall into that trap because, well, let's be honest, when a lot of things in life, it doesn't go your way. You don't get that promotion. You fail a test. You lose a game. Whatever it is, go through a breakup. It's really easy to just sit there and, well, I'm going to blame everything else. This happened for this reason. And it's easy to just kind of sit down and be miserable. It's a lot harder to pick yourself up and overcome that. So yeah, when that negative spiral happens, it's a slippery slope for sure. I think that's where surrounding yourself in life with good people can go a long way, because you watch out for others and never be afraid to reach out to somebody who looks like they're maybe having a bad day. Check up on your friends, your family, and don't be afraid to reach out for help yourself. I think that's a big thing, is the mental health aspect of life has such a connection to your physical well-being and just your overall how you do in financially, how you do relationship-wise with your kids, with friends, family. So you kind of have to make that a priority in life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Totally. And your brother had touched on that when he was on here, like just saying that you aren't healthy without your whole body being healthy. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, hey, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir on that one. If there's a certain part of your body that's not healthy, the whole body's struggling.
Yeah. 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 It's definitely taking that holistic approach. But I think your mental well-being is kind of the nucleus of everything else, that if this is off, chances are a lot of other things are going to be off as well. So keeping that going strong and making that a top priority in life, I think that goes a long way.
Totally. Yeah. And Paul, when you were like going through it and kind of working your way towards recovery, how, like, did you let a lot of people in, or was it kind of one of those situations where you would, like, as the buzz phrase go, like grind in silence, or what was kind of your MO with it all?
I would definitely suffer in silence. Cause I didn't like to make my problems other people's problems. Everybody's going through their own stuff in life. So I'm not going to lay my challenges on you. I mean, sure, around my parents, I was way more raw and open and honest, because I knew that's not only how they wanted me to be, but I had to have somebody to reach out to as best I could, because the toughest thing going through challenges by yourself is a real tough thing. So when you feel like there's nobody who understands you, you don't have anybody to talk to, that's a real rough thing to deal with in life. Humans are – we're companion-based creatures. So dealing with a challenge is hard enough together. Dealing with it when you feel like you're alone is even tougher. But at the same time, I also, like, I didn't hide from any of it. I was never, it's kind of one of those, like, yep, here's who I am right now, world. I'm doing the best I can. A lot of things are, I can't change right now, but I wasn't going to hide from it. And I've always been an open book with it. I didn't shy away from it. Don't pretend like it's not this thing that I like to put in a box and shove in the dark corner of the room and pretend like it didn't happen or whatever. So I'm an open book with it. It doesn't make me uncomfortable to talk about it. And I, nothing wrong with it being the opposite way. Like I said, everybody kind of handles it differently. And I've met a lot of people in those circles that would disagree completely, that it's one of those things that would be better to be forgotten. And that's perfectly okay as well. It's all however you internalize it, how you view it. But for me, it simply is what it is. So I'm not going to hide it. I'm not going to run from it.
Yeah, no, I get you. That's awesome. It is. It's just with everything, you're consistently taking it head on as opposed to shying away, you know, and sometimes it is easier to shy away. Or like, that's what you need to do to with this kind of thing. But Paul, how do you think it's affected you as a husband and a father? Because you're a big family guy, you're a great son, you're a great brother. And then now it's transitioned, right? You're a great father, you're a great husband. How had your struggles and the growth throughout the process and the eventual overcoming of your battle with cancer influence that? And how does it still manifest in who you are with that?
For me, that's where a lot of that perspective thing comes into play. Like, and you'll find this out at some point, hopefully, Joe, if having kids or whatever is the craziest, most stressful thing in the world. And it's by far the greatest thing ever too. Like I said, I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and I love being a dad more than I love anything in life.
That's amazing.
It definitely makes me appreciate that more, because I mean, I got real close to never having that opportunity. So I'm always super grateful for it. And then I look back dealing with that. So like when little things happen here, I kind of think to myself, like, is this really that big of a deal? Like, okay, yeah. So something got broke in the house. That's kind of part of life. Like, it's probably not worth losing my temper over, getting upset over, because what am I teaching to my kids? Well, when little things happen, they molehills become mountains. I don't want to teach them that. I don't employ that in my own life, so I certainly don't want to teach it to them. So I think that's a big thing, is kind of all going back to that perspective. But it's I know you had asked me about that earlier when we were chatting a few weeks ago about just having kids and what's that like, and I would say that anybody out there who has kids will attest to the fact there's nothing else in life that even comes close to it or that can possibly prepare you for it. And it's the strangest, most wonderful, wild thing in the world. I mean, I don't know. I just love it. I just feel very lucky and blessed that God gave me that opportunity and that second chance on life. So getting to share that now with two little humans is pretty wonderful.
Gosh, yeah, that's so great. It really is. And Paul's going to be a great dad. I mean, you can't tell. Like, Paul's a killer dad. Paul, what, like, do you have any stresses about their health? Like, do you ever think, like, oh, man, like, are you ever worried about that? Does that ever cross your mind?
So they've done a lot of studies on that. And like I told you, I was only 13 when I got sick. So there's a lot of diseases out there that are obviously affect older people. And I don't mean necessarily even just elderly people, but older as in like adults. And they're largely due to maybe some unfortunate lifestyle choices. Well, at 13, you haven't really been around long enough to make too many bad decisions with your personal vices or bad habits or anything that could affect you. So my doctors at this point have basically chalked it up to a genetic anomaly, that this was something that I was kind of born with and something didn't fire right way back when I was being formed. And it reared its ugly head later in life for me. They have no reason to believe it's hereditary. Nothing like that. So there's really no way to find out, because they haven't been able to figure out what the source of it is. So unfortunately, there's no way to like have my kids tested in a certain manner to tell. I guess it's one of those things that if I really sit down and think about it, yeah, it could be kind of like, oh my gosh, like you really hope this never happens, obviously, because there's nothing worse than having to deal with a child who's going through that. That's why I've always said, for me, this was tougher on my parents than it was on me. Because when you're going through it, it's one thing. When you see somebody else you love, it's another thing. And then when that's somebody else's your own kid, oh my gosh, I still can't imagine what they went through. But at the same time, I kind of look at it like, okay, well, why would I dwell on the thoughts of what if this were to happen? Well, if it were to happen, then we deal with it. And you pray it doesn't, and the numbers are ever in our favor. It's kind of one of those, like, you know, people say it all the time. Like, oh, I'm just, it's a 40% chance of rain this weekend. Well, to me, that means there's a 60% chance of sunshine. And if there was a 60% chance of rain, you'd be way more upset. So how come you're focusing on the negative? And that's where it all comes back to that. We're tying everything back to this perspective on life. I mean, I could walk around with an umbrella over my head, even though it's sunny out, just on the off chance I happen to walk under a rain cloud. But it's probably not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'm not mm-hmm. going to worry about it until it does happen. And if it does, then we deal with it.
Nice. Oh, nice. I'm glad to hear that it's not looking like that's in the future. We pray, like you mentioned, that it's not. But we know that you will address it as needed if it gets to that point. You had mentioned your parents, Paul, and I couldn't help but think of them throughout the entirety of our conversation. How close are you now? I mean, you're probably close to the men, but how close are you now with your mom and your dad having gone through that?
Oh, my gosh. You talk about growing closer to people. That changes everything. Like, you know, you get closer to people when you go through challenges, whether it's family, friends, athletic teams, like all that. So when you go through something as tough as that, that's where you definitely build that bond, and it gets strengthened through those challenges. And I guess it's, I don't know, just you look back on it now and you think like, man, why did this happen? Why did we go through all this? And then I see the relationship that I formed with them, and it's just one more like positive takeaway from dealing with people or dealing with situations, and then how that affects your relationship with people.
Are they both still around and doing okay?
Oh yeah. 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 They're
good.
They're doing good. We're still, I'm very lucky. I have great parents, and we have a great relationship now, and it's something I'll always cherish for sure.
And so what is it like when they talk about it now? Like, 'cause there have to be times where they bring it up and say like, man,
I don't know. I think we kind of all have a similar, but not the same outlook, view of it. They probably don't agree with the whole, like, well, it was the best thing to ever happen to me because it changed me and helped me so much become who I am today. They probably wouldn't be on board with that. Or I know they wouldn't be on board with that, but at the same time, they also understand why I have the views I do on it. And I think it's kind of, we all took lessons away from it. Everybody handled it in their own way. Yeah.
That's awesome. Paul, I ask this to everybody, and I feel as if you've really mentioned it, and I almost feel, I don't mean this in any backhanded way.
Not at all.
Do you have any regrets in your life, Paul?
No. I mean, sure, there are things that I would look back on it and go, I should have done this different. I should have done that different. Yeah. I mean, there's nobody alive who could honestly look in a mirror and think I did every single thing exactly the way it should have been done. But at the same time, I don't live with that stuck in the past sort of mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I think you can't grow if that's how if you're constantly thinking about what you should have done, where you should have been, living with those regrets, then you automatically become stuck at whatever time that thing you regret happened. Mm-hmm. And until you learn to accept that and move on from it, you'll always be stuck in that time. So there's no progress if you're like that. Not to say you can't look back on things and learn from them and wish things might have gone differently or this or that, but it's about not dwelling on that, not living with that freeze frame type of mentality.
Yeah, getting fixated on stuff is just the worst thing possible, because then you get that narrow-minded vision and you just lose the reality outside of that realm.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of people that I've talked to tend to have a similar response. Like, no, like I don't really have any regrets. Like, of course, there's things you want differently to have done differently, but ultimately you learn from them. I think it's all, again, it comes back to like that mindset thing and the way you view situations and the way that people who want to do better and be better view situations tends to be that, you know what, things have happened. And because of that, I am who I am. And mm-hmm. I like who I am because I've grown and I've taken things and made the most of them. So I tend to agree with you on that. Something I do think though, and especially for people who have struggled, which we know you have, I think people who have struggled tend to live gratefully. And I also contend that just gratitude and living a grateful life and having that on your heart and on your mind is one of the most pivotal things that we can do towards being better people, having a better life, being happy, ultimately into experiencing mm-hmm. joy. What role, Paul, does gratitude play in your life?
Huge.
Mm-hmm.
You just, I know it's cliche, but every day is a gift. Just being appreciative of what you have goes a long way. Not living with wants and greeds and stuff is super helpful because then it makes you kind of live in the moment and be thankful for everything you are blessed with. So I look every day and every morning I say a very quick prayer with my son because he's 4. The memorization is still coming. So we keep everything short and simple and thank you God for this day. Cause if nothing else, that's all you've got is today. So you might as well be thankful for it because you didn't deserve it. You didn't earn it. It was gifted to you.
Yeah. That's why they call it a present, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely. They call it the present.
Yep.
It's got to be like a real profound thing for you, like gratitude, because you've been there where you've been in an experience where you were at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like you saw how finite and how fragile life is hands on. Mm-hmm. And then now we're like still kicking, still living, doing your best. I mean, this is a big turnaround as far as health goes. So.
Yeah. 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 When you have that, it really makes you appreciative. Cause that's one thing that can be taken away real fast. So mm-hmm. if you have your health, yeah, that alone is a lot.
As we kind of near towards an end here, I have a couple of final questions. And one of them is that, which you somewhat have touched on, but do you have specific like advice to someone who's going through it right now, to someone specifically going through a chemo, going through a battle with cancer, going through that tough aspect of life? Because I know you said don't give up. And I feel like that was... in general, I don't know if you want to mm-hmm. double down on that, or I'm also giving you the chance if you want to specify specifically to like cancer patients in general.
No, I mean, I still think that's the biggest thing across all facets is mm-hmm. is having that that resilience to keep going and to keep fighting. At the same time, specifically for that, it's don't be afraid to reach out for help. I mean, all these hospitals out there, they have so many great resources to help people dealing with stuff, whether you're the person dealing with it or it's someone you know. So it's okay to ask for help and to admit that you can't handle things on your own. It's okay to look at your day and go, yeah, I'm having a bad day. It's all right. And then reaching out to the people you need in life to help get you through it.
There's always a sense of proactivity that you need. And like, that's what I think is a big battle we see now, is people are like, all right, I'm having a bad day. And then they don't do that. Like, they need that extra like push to do at least something. Like, you're not, it's just the reach out, the perseverance kind of aspect of it. And that that little first step is, can sometimes be tough enough, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Paul.
Yeah. I completely agree.
Do you have any kind of closing words or any last words of wisdom just across the board to anyone specific, to anyone in general, to our listeners, anything that you have that you is on your mind, on your heart, that you kind of want to put out there?
Life is a wonderful thing. Don't waste it. Please, please, please don't waste it, because it's the only one you're getting. So do everything you can to make the most of it and to give that to other people as well. Try to make everybody, try every day to make somebody smile. Share that happiness, share that joy. And if you're somebody who's going through some stuff that doesn't make you the happy person right now, then look for that person in life who is, because it's infectious.
How relatable is that? Yeah. That's awesome, Paul, man. I'll tell you, I love the way you think of things. I love the way you look at the world. Imagine the productivity, imagine the positive joy that people would be living with if 50% of the world had the mindset that you had, right? And I don't know if it's because people who struggled really immensely, like have gone through some really, really tough stuff, tend to have like that kind of mindset, because you've seen it all. But man, it's you're a warrior, and in the best of ways. So I really appreciate all that.
I appreciate it. Hopefully some of this made some sense or something.
Oh my gosh, all across the board. I loved it. Yeah. Everyone, this is Paul Martin. As you can see, Paul Martin is just a fantastic guy. I will include his social media in the links below. If you have anything that you want to discuss with Paul, please get in touch with them. I say that without even asking Paul. I just know how Paul is. Paul's going to be cool with that. But Paul, once again, thanks for being here. I really appreciate all of your vulnerability and your willingness to open up and give us hope, right? Let us, maybe we're out there struggling, give people a glimmer of hope and be that beacon of joy for all of us listeners.
I love it, Joe. Just keep spreading that happiness.
Amen, Paul. Yeah. So everybody, if you haven't yet, hit that subscribe button. You don't want to miss another episode that I promise will be rich like this one. There are people like Paul Martin out there that want to make a difference, that are making a difference. And it's a pleasure to have them on the show. So again, I'm your host, Joe Clark. Paul, again, thank you for being here. And if you haven't yet, our listeners, now again is your time. Hit the subscribe button. This has been another Chats with Clark.